Hello and welcome to The Moore Show. I'm your host, Kevin Moore, and for the next hour, I'll cover subjects of an alternative variety that most shows do not touch. On today's show, I'm about to be joined with our guest, Dolores Cannon. Now, Dolores is a past life regressionist and hypnotherapist who specializes in the recovery and cataloging of lost knowledge. She has been specializing in past life therapy since 1979. Now, Dolores was nearly 50 years old when she began experimenting with hypnosis and past life regression. She has also been a UFO investigator for the past 20 years, and using her skills as a regressionist, she's been able to help people that have been involved in UFO abduction cases. She has also written several books on the UFO information about so-called volunteers. Dolores, welcome to the show.
Thanks for asking me to be on today.
And how are you? You been okay?
Oh, yes. You know, we're planning all these trips. I'll be in Europe, and then when I get back from there, I'm going to be doing a round-the-world trip. That's going to be gone for over a month to mostly Australia, New Zealand. So I'm always traveling everywhere. And then I travel all over the United States, too, doing different conferences, lectures, and classes. So I manage to keep busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So, okay, we're going to discuss your work, and we're going to look into the three waves of people coming to this planet. That's your work based around the volunteers who have been coming to Earth for the past 50 years. Okay, well, let's look into the past life regression work that you do. So let's just get you to summarize past lives, and how do you take clients into a past life?
Oh, that's the easiest part of all. But I've been doing hypnosis for over 40 years. I started in the 1960s when all it was just ordinary hypnosis, you know, habits, stop smoking, lose weight. And I stumbled into the reincarnation of past lives in the 60s by accident, if anything is an accident. And then I began doing the past life regressions. And I've been doing that exclusively since about over 30 years now. And I've developed my own technique to do this. But the past life regressions are very, very simple to do. See, everyone has had past lives. I've not, in the 30 years I've been doing this exclusively, I've not found anyone who has not had a past life. And I've done thousands and thousands of people. And they come to me now in my office here in Arkansas. They come from all over the world. But it's a very simple thing to do, but what I do with that is we try to find the answers to the problems in this lifetime. Sometimes come from another life, so we take them back to the most appropriate life to explain what's happening in this lifetime. But as I began doing this, I developed my own technique, which is not like any other hypnosis technique that's being taught out there. Because I found ways that we could have contact with what I call the source of all knowledge. And once you do that, you can have the answers to any questions you want. That's why I've written so many books, because I consider myself the reporter, the investigator, the researcher of lost knowledge. I've been able to find the answers to anything anybody would have questions about. And then along the way with this new technique, I found ways to have instant healing with anybody of any disease, illness, or anything. And that's the main part of my teaching and my therapy work right now. Because I work as a therapy and a counselor when people come to work over their problems. But a lot of them now are coming is because of the physical problems. And many of them are scheduled for surgery. And if we can get them before they have surgery, they won't need it. So this is a very powerful part of my work now. It's not just the research and the finding the lost information. It's being able to heal people. And this is what I'm teaching in my classes all over the world. We've done a lot of work in Russia. I was there four times last year. And Australia, we have a tremendous response there. I'm teaching many, many hundreds and hundreds of students there. So this is my main work right now, is focused on that. But I found the answers to just about any metaphysical question that you would want to ask me anyway. That's kind of a summary, I guess you would say.
Okay, so all the information and theories that are presented in your books are all accumulated through the clients you work with?
Yes, I'm not a psychic. I don't channel. I'm just a reporter, and I write what I find. And sometimes it's like putting a puzzle together. I'll get a piece of information from one person, and then I'll get something from somebody else that will connect. And this happens everywhere. I'll get a piece in one session, then I'll find something in another one. It's like putting a puzzle together. And I keep getting now more and more complicated metaphysical theories and concepts. So that's where my latest books are, the Convoluted Universe series, are going into these complicated theories. I say they are books for people who want their minds bent like pretzels.
So a lot of your work's based on the ET subject. So let's just explore that field of your work for a moment.
That's not a lot of my work. That's part of my work. I worked with ETs and UFOs abductions for 25 years, but it's only a part of my work. Go ahead.
So, sorry, a part of your work is based on the ET subject. So in your opinion then, and obviously the information that you've gathered from your clients, are the ETs responsible for life on Earth? I mean, was it their job to plant life in your view?
Yes, I've written 4 books about my findings. And the one, Keepers of the Garden, is one of the first ones I wrote up on this subject, and that's now in 20 languages all over the world. And in the book, The Custodians, I have my 25 years of research with the UFOs. And this has come out again and again and again through everybody I've worked with. That was how life began on Earth, was they were responsible. And that's way back at the very beginning. And I've done lectures on this. It depends on how much detail you want to get into. But this was a job they were given to start life. They go it all over the universes, and this is how life has began everywhere. And a lot of people don't like to think of that idea because they like to think it God is responsible in there, but he definitely is. God is the one who told them to do these things, and they're just carrying out their instructions. They said this is the way life has began everywhere since the beginning of the universes. And it's their job to introduce the cells to see what will grow in a particular environment in a planet. And they said you would have been surprised what you could have looked like. It all depends on the type of cells that will work in our primeval soup, I guess you would say. And they worked on this for eons. And they're always there taking care of it and observing it and recording what happens. So this is a very involved process.
So, I mean, how far back did the seeding of humanity go from the past life regression work that you've done with your clients?
I've taken people back to the beginning of Earth. So that's pretty far back.
Yeah.
To where there wasn't any life on Earth at all. And to where all there was, it was just the exploding volcanoes, you know, and there was a lot of ammonia and things in the air, and nothing could grow here. No plants or anything could grow until all of that was cleared out and the atmosphere and everything was stabilized. So that's how far back it goes. They had to work with that first to stabilize the atmosphere and make sure everything was right to begin growing things on Earth. And the first things, of course, they had to have water, then they had to have plants. It was all very logical progression. And what a lot of people don't understand is when you take people into past life regressions, you're not just a human being here on Earth in this body. This is just one little tiny part of your education, I would say, your school. You've all been ETs. Everybody has. You've all had lives on other planets, other dimensions, and some dimensions you don't even have a body. You're just a light being. I've taken people back to all of these lifetimes. They just happen to come up. Many of them are on spaceships, and they tell me their jobs as they're doing this work. And many of them, there's 2 different kinds. One were called the planters or the seeders. They were the ones who were involved with the actual introduction of cells on the planet. Then you have the other ones that are the recorders. They were the ones that came back at various times to see what was growing and what was not. It's a very long, complicated process, but I've had people go back to the very beginning in these sessions that I've had. We never know where they're going to go. That's what I mean. I put it all together like a puzzle. So we have the complete story of life and how it began on Earth and the ET involvement, which is a very positive and wonderful thing.
So if we're going to say that, you know, there's been some sort of extraterrestrial intervention in the seeding of this planet, where do stories like Adam and Eve fit in then?
Well, you want to get into religion, that's a whole different ballgame because, you know, all of that, those are legends that go way, way back. But if you want to break it down, there wasn't just one because whenever they go to plants and then you have to have animals. All of this was introduced. Animals were brought from other planets. Even the first cells were brought from other places to start the beginning of the cellular progression. They wanted cells to clump together to form a multicelled organism. After that, they didn't care what it formed as long as it was something that was alive. That's how the first plants began. And I asked them one time, where do these cells come from? They said they could come from anywhere. We gather them throughout the universes, and we use them in the appropriate environment. So over eons of time, animals began to form. And then, whenever it got to the proper point, they had to have an intelligent being. Then they had to manipulate the genes and the cells to create an intelligent human being. And this is when they used the ape. You know, we are 98% compatible genetically with the ape. You can give an ape blood and it will live. And this is what the first one, they used the ape because of the large brain capacity and because of the fact it had hands with opposable thumbs. You had to have some way that they could make tools as they evolved. But, you know, in the beginning, it took a long time, but there wasn't just one Adam and Eve. That's a legend that is representative of what happened with the seeding of the earth.
Yeah.
You know, actually, this doesn't go against the Bible. Everything I've found is the evolutionist theory and the creationist theory fit together very, very, very well. It really fits together perfectly.
So
there's no contradiction.
So how do the dinosaurs fit into your research? I mean, were they here before the ET seeded the planet, or was that part of the seeding?
Oh, no, I said there was nothing here when they began. Nothing but just dirt and water. They even started with the water. The dinosaurs were part of the experiments to see what was going to be able to grow. And, you know, I've also found in my work there were humans living at the same time as the dinosaurs. So a lot of what the scientists say is not accurate. But the dinosaurs were part of the experiments to see what would grow. And then it was soon found that they were going to be too big. It wasn't going to work. So they were allowed to die out.
Okay.
And of course they died out when the first shift of the earth occurred and the ice age. And so they were just allowed to die out. They were not productive, in other words.
Okay. Now we've got Zachariah Sitchin hopefully coming onto the show not too long. I know he's not been very well recently, but we're waiting for him to just recover and hopefully come on the show. And now a lot of Zachariah's talks about the possibility that we were genetically altered. How does this how does your work compare to his? I.e., you know, was the Sumerian tablets that Zachariah's information came from based on a group of ETs that came to Earth eons later after your original sort of seeders?
Yes. Yes, I know Zachariah and I know his work. We have been on lecture circuits together and done book signings together. There is no contradiction except that his work picks up much later after my work. My work begins at the very beginning. His work with the Sumerian tablets are the records of a group of ETs that came after everything was established. And they took and altered some of the existing species to become slaves. And that's what his work is about. But my work begins eons before that. So they didn't create life. They took life that was here and altered it to make slaves out of it. But then later, you know, they came in and told them, you can't do that, and so they made them leave too. And this is what it goes back to in the beginning of the Old Testament about these people.
Of course.
So that's where he's basing his work on. His book is accurate. It's just that it starts later.
Okay, and in your past life work with your clients, obviously they must speak of many different ET species. There can't just be to be one, surely.
Oh no, there's many, many, many.
And where are their roots from? Where did they start from?
The same way we started. They've told me that they keep a watch on the planets. This is what they, some of them groups do. They just fly throughout the galaxies and the universes, and they're looking for planets that are getting ready to support life. And they said, whenever a planet reaches the point that it can support life, that's a very important time in the history of that planet. There are councils with rules and regulations over solar systems, over galaxies, over universes. And whenever the planet reaches the point to where it can support life, they record that in the history of that planet. Then the group that's responsible are have to go and see what will grow on that planet. And it all depends on, like I said, the primeval soup, the atmosphere, the chemicals, what the soil is, what will grow there. And they said many planets went down the insectoid line. Many of them went down the reptilian line. We went down the mammal line. They said you'd be amazed what you could have looked like. Just depend on how it all fit together. But in my work, we have found, I guess you would call ETs, that you wouldn't even think were alive. They are so many different body shapes and compositions that you think, well, that can't be a living being. But it is. So we are going with the humanoid shape, they said, which is a very popular shape to use in the universe because it's practical to have the head and the two arms and two legs. But I've seen many that have four or five legs and arms and all different kinds of compositions. And but there are some that were just like a ball you wouldn't think was alive, or a triangle. But there are so many different types, you can't just put it down to a few. Most of the ones on the ships are a humanoid type because that was more practical. But they develop along the line of whatever was available on the planet they came from. They're evolved enough now that they're out doing traveling. They have the technology now, so they are traveling. And so just like on Star Trek and Star Wars, they have all these different types on the ships. But we've all been these things. I've had people go back to when they were all of these different types. But that's why we're just this one type. And there's nothing special about us. Really, we're at the bottom of the barrel, if you want to call it that.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, just sort of summarize your past life work. Have we only ever had past lives as ETs, or have we been anything else?
Also, everybody's been animals, plants, rocks, air. You've been absolutely everything you could imagine, because that's what it's all about. You have to know what everything is like. You can't do it in one lifetime. You have to know what absolutely everything is. This is what's very important now with the environment and ecology.
Sure.
If we just remember, we were all part of this. We've all had existences as plants and animals. If we could just remember that, we could say we are all one, and we would be much kinder to the environment. But it's not just ETs, it's we have been everything, and that's part of our education.
So would you say then that the ETs are closer to the source, the sort of God energy, if you want to call it that, than us?
Yes, definitely. They call it the source. They are closer to it than we are because they understand it and it guides them, but also it keeps them alive. This is one thing that's important. They think we are amusing because we have to eat. There's three things about us that they think is fascinating, that we have to eat, and that the way we procreate, they think that's hysterical, and then the fact that we die. And see, they don't have to, they don't do any of that. And the part about the food, they said that's what kills the human being. By the eating and the breathing, that's what deteriorates the body. And, you know, we have scientists on Earth, Earth scientists, who are investigating this, and they're trying to eliminate the act of eating and breathing because they know this is what makes the body die. They're trying to eliminate it now. I said, they're going to take all the fun out of everything. But with the ETs, they don't have to consume food, and all of the organs in that part of their body have already atrophied because they don't use it. They exist on light. And I asked them one time, where does the light come from? They said, the source. So they are closer to God, the source, than we will ever be because they have evolved to the point they need that energy coming direct from the source to be alive.
Okay, so basically your belief in all this does not neglect a sort of divine creator or God. No, the ETs have the same idea as well.
Yes, definitely. And I've had many, many of my clients go back to when they were with God. And I've reported this in my books. And it's not at all what the churches say it is. It's extremely beautiful and wonderful, but they don't even have a clue of what it is really all about.
So what makes coming to this planet so special?
This is the most difficult planet to come to. This is the most challenging planet. This is the densest planet in the whole solar system, in this whole part of the galaxy. It's a very challenging planet. They said you have to be very brave to come here because you come to Earth to learn emotions and limitations. And some of those are not found on other planets or in other things that you're taking lessons for. But you come to learn emotions and limitations. But also, we are a planet that was created with free will. So they sit back and say, okay, now what are you going to do with this? And when you're on the spirit side and you're making your plan and your contracts of you're going to come back, this is a school is all it is. Okay, I'll take a course now over here in the Earth School, which could last for many, many, many lifetimes. But I'm going to take this and just see what I'm going to learn over there. And when you're on the spirit side and you're making your plans, there are guides and masters and elders to help you make your plans. And they're telling you, well, you know, this is, you're setting up a pretty hard schedule for yourself. Do you think you really want to do that? You say, oh, yeah, I'll learn a lot. I'll pay back a lot of karma. I want to go and do it all right now. But they say, well, all right, then just remember it's your choice. What you're setting up will be there to help you. But you're going to have a hard time. It'd be easier if you took it slower and easier, tried to work on one thing at a time. But some people are in a hurry, and they don't want to do that. So they set up too hard of a course, like if you were taking college and didn't leave any time, extracurricular time, to yourself. So this can be very difficult. But they say if you choose to come to Earth, they admire you. You have to be very brave because to come to Earth, you have to be a master manifester, have to evolve to that degree.
Right.
That means you can create anything you want. There is nothing you can't have because you've done it, and this is, you have to, they told me that one of the main lessons to learn on Earth is how to manipulate energy. Because everything is energy. So if we're already coming, we have already graduated to the point that we are a master manifester. It means we can use energy to create anything you want, absolutely anything, because you have to learn how powerful your mind is. And there's nothing you can't have. They've told me many, many times there are no limitations except the limitations you put upon yourself. First you decide, you got to know what it is you want, of course, but then you can have anything. Everything in your life you have created and put there. And a lot of people don't like that idea because they don't like how their lives are going. But if you realize that, then you can uncreate these things that you don't like about your life. That's how powerful your mind is, and that's one of the main lessons you're here for, to learn how to do these things.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a kind of a school where you can't skip a grade, but you can have to take a grade over if you don't learn it the first time. And that's the problem. People don't learn it. And they have to come back and do it again with the same people, same circumstances, take that grade over until they finally learn it. You can't skip from kindergarten to college. You have to take each step of the way. And this is why people have the same circumstances happening in their life again and again and again. Women especially keep drawing the same kind of men into their life, one after the other, men that aren't good for them. So finally they say, hey, this is not what I want. What am I doing here? And then they figure it out, and they stop that process. And then they can move on to the next lesson, which may not be easier. It may be more difficult, but at least it'll be something that's different. And I asked them one time, see, when we come into the life, everything is erased. We come in with all memory erased. And I asked them one time, wouldn't it be easier if we knew why we were here, if we knew what we were supposed to be working on, if we knew our connection with other people? And they said, no, it wouldn't be a test if you knew the answers. So here we are trying to stumble through this and find our way back. But the important thing about right now is that this is the time of the awakening. People are beginning to wake up. They're beginning to understand what's happening. They are beginning to understand why they're here and what they're supposed to be working on and doing. So it's the awakening. And it's the what I call the veil that we come in with is thinning. People all over the world know it because I get emails. I get hundreds of emails every day from all over the world. People are beginning to wake up. They're beginning to see that there's something more to this, and they can make changes, and they can make their lives different once they understand all of this. So now is a very exciting time to be alive.
Yeah, I mean, you'll always get those people, won't you, that will sort of, look down on this kind of subject and these kind of ideas. And, you're not here to change anyone except for, you know, yourself, really. I mean, you can only help yourself. But for those people out there that, you know, that seem so trapped, I mean, where are they going on this journey?
Well, they have to take the class over again if they don't get it right this time. Like I said, you don't skip a grade, but you have to take it over again if you don't understand it the first time.
Okay.
They are stuck.
Yes, they are. Yes,
but, but we're not here to change anybody else's viewpoint because there's no sense in even trying. You try, and it's just going to go over their head. But I tell people when they email and call and say, well, the members of their family or friends or other fellow students, they say, I can't get them to understand this. I said, don't worry about it. The more you try, they're going to have more resistance. Just wait, and whenever they get ready and they begin asking questions, and they will, they begin to see what they're believing is not all, it's not really everything that's there. When they start asking questions, then we'll be here with the answers that they need. So don't push it.
But does your...
That's just the grade they're in. They're still taking their baby steps, and they're in the kindergarten stage.
Sure, sure. I mean, we've spoke a lot about, how the planet was seeded and how creation possibly did come along. But then how does the Bible fit in with the work that you've done?
Well, what is the Bible?
It's a history book, perhaps, if you want to class it as that.
It's a history book, and it was written by man. You know that, don't you?
Well, I do feel that's true, that the Bible was... written by man, and it was probably a history book. But, I mean, that's just my opinion. And, religion's very important to a lot of the people that's listening now. They may feel that this sort of...
Yes, it is, and...
Go ahead.
Religion is good, because if they go about it the right way, they help a lot of people. But I'm teaching people to think for themselves. I've written many of my books deal with the life of Jesus, the way it really happened, and what he was taught, and how all of this began. And you know, one thing that's important is I've received a lot of books from England when I was doing all of my research on the early days of Jesus that are not people even know about. They were lost books, and this is when I do my research, I find a lot of things that people don't know. But... you've got to remember, if you do your Bible research, the Bible was a compilation of many, many stories, books, papyrus, scrolls that were all put together by man. This happened in the, I'm trying to think when it was, 600 or 700 A.D.
Okay.
done with the Third Council of Nicene. They had the meeting of the different priests and the monks, and they said, okay, we've got to put together a book. Now, we're going to have to choose from these stories and scrolls and manuscripts what we're going to put in this book. So they're the ones that put it all together. And so it was not, people think it was the hand of God came down and wrote it. They took a lot of very valuable material, but a lot of the stories, especially from the Old Testament in the beginning, go back to ancient Egyptian legends. And that's, if you do a lot of research, you're going to find a great deal of similarity. These legends have been around forever, and they included them in the writing of the Bible. Even the people in the New Testament, you know, there was written, they said, 200 years after the death of Christ, is a lot of these things were written down. They were not written down at the time. So the church people who were doing this had to pick these pieces and put it together and say, this is what we're going to have be the Bible. Naturally, while they're going through these stories, they decided to take out any mention of reincarnation. You remember, the Romans were the ones who were doing this. And what were the Romans? They were the conquerors of the world. They didn't want anything in there that gave anyone any hope. It was all about control, that, you know, you got to do what we say or you're going to go to hell. For one thing, there is no hell, and hell is not even mentioned in the Bible if you really look at it. There's some old ancient legends. But this is the way they've introduced the Bible, was out of fear and control. Now, it was later, many years later, other people found other books and other stories, and they said, this needs to be in there. They said, sorry, it's done now. We're not going to add any more. We're not going to change it. And that was how the Bible came about. And it is a history book, and it's full of contradictions. And I know there's a lot of people aren't going to understand this, but I've lectured on these things. I've done tremendous research, probably more than the average person out there would even consider doing, into the histories of the Bible and how all of these things came about. So I don't want to get into religious discussions about it.
Sure.
I know the church is good. The people there, if they're treating them correctly, it's a valuable place to be. And I said, we don't try to change anyone. Everyone is where they're supposed to be. A lot of the cathedrals are extremely beautiful, and they have a wonderful energy about them. And if people, if this is where they're happy, that's all right. That's where they're advancement is, they are where they're supposed to be. But if they start asking questions and thinking there might be more, then we have some answers for them to consider. If the, in my company, you know, I have Ozark Mountain Publishing, and my company has printed many books by other authors about the church and about the Bible to get people to look at these things and try to understand a little more. Doesn't take away from the beauty of religion and from God or any of it. It just gives you a better understanding.
So, okay, obviously, do you think
I probably
this
probably made some enemies out there? But
No. I think people are ready for change. They're listening to this show right now. They may disagree what's being said, but then again, they're tuning in to listen. So,
give them... I just tell people, think for yourself. Ask lots of questions. Think for yourself. Then make up your mind.
Yes, exactly.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
Sorry, we just spoke about the Bible there, but tying this in with the religious aspect of why the governments or the world governments won't release the information that there's, you know, there has been an ET presence with us for a long time. Do you think that there's a reason why they won't, that they've used this cover up for so many years?
Yes, because I've worked with the UFO community now for over 25 years. I'm very aware of all these things because I lecture at every UFO conference in the world. And it's ridiculous, but they keep saying they're worried about worldwide panic and they're worried about how it will affect religions if they realize we're not the only species in the galaxies. It's ridiculous. This is the best that anybody could do. We're at the bottom. But they're worried about how it will affect people. And, of course, a lot of people say, we're ready for it. It doesn't matter. But they also said they can't come out now and admit it's true after lying for, what, 50 years or more? We have to just keep up with this pretense, because we can't tell people we've been lying to them all these years.
But in your opinion, then, why haven't the ETs made sort of global contact? And is it not in their best interest to interfere with that with us? Is that why?
Well, you know the Star Trek directive of non-interference?
I do.
Very, very real. It's very real. It is not a science fiction concept. They are not allowed to interfere with the development of a civilized species. They have to watch and record, and they try to do what they can behind the scenes to keep us from blowing ourselves up, but they're not allowed to interfere. But that's part of the agreement, non-interference, and also because this planet was given free will, they have to step back and just let us make their mistakes and, you know, shake their heads, say, when are these kids going to understand and figure out this is not the way to go? So they can't interfere. They just have to watch.
But will the ETs let us join them in the end?
That's what they want. That's what this is all about. That's why they have developed us into an intelligent species in the first place. Because eventually we will join with, it's called the Galactic Federation, we will be a part of it. They want us to be a part of it, mostly because of our curiosity and our creativity. They think we would be very valuable. But we have to get over this violence. They're afraid of us, that the violence that the human race has is terrible. That's why we're isolated over here. You know, we're just a very small planet isolated over here in this part of the solar system to protect the rest of the universe from us, because we're the violent ones, and they're observing and watching us. But they're really afraid of us, and they said until we can get over our violence and over what we're doing to each other, we wouldn't be any good with their group at all. Because they're totally full of love. And I know a lot of other probably people have spoken on here talk about their negativity and things they have done to people. That's because they don't understand the reasons why all these things are happening. And at the level of transcend I work at, we get the real information and the real stories of why, what's happening to the people. And it's not negative when you understand the bigger picture. So they've been here taking care of us since the beginning of the world. They told me one time in one of the sessions, they said, why do people think we're here to take over the world? It's ours. It always has been. They said, we can't do anything as bad to you as you do to yourself. So they would love to have us join them, but first we got to get over this stuff we're in now. And it's happening, because that's why I said this is an exciting time to be living in. The veil is lifting, we're awakening, beginning to figure out what's going on, and we have to get pulled away from this violence, and
Sure. Then
everything is going to be beautiful. That's where we're headed.
Yeah, because isn't it strange that, you know, sort of back in the late 40s, that the UFO sort of phenomena started happening? Now, where's the connection with the atomic testing and the interest that was, you know, the mass sort of impact on ufology that happened from that time until now?
Oh, boy, that's part of my lectures that I will be giving. And I don't know if you read my books or not, but all of this is in my books. There's a direct connection, very definite direct connection. Because the only time they could ever interfere with the mankind is if we were going to blow up the planet, destroy the world. Because if we destroyed this little planet here, I said, what, you know, this little bitty planet, you wouldn't think it'd be so important. But they said, if this one planet were to blow itself up, it would cause reverberations throughout the solar system, throughout the galaxy, even throughout the universe. So it cannot be allowed to happen. It would disrupt lives and civilizations, even in the other dimensions. See, a lot of this, there's too complicated for me to go into on the show,
of
but
course.
I'll be covering a lot of this in the lecture. But because of that, we cannot be allowed to destroy the world. So by the end of the war, the first World War One, whenever the first atomic bomb was dropped, that really got their attention. They said, we better get down there and see what these kids are up to. They were not. We were not supposed to have that yet. It was not supposed to be allowed into our timeline yet. We were given inventions and things that you're supposed to have when the time is right. Then they're allowed into the timeline. Whether it goes back to teaching the first man how to plant corn, how to hunt, how to do all of those things. They always came and lived among them to show them the next thing they were supposed to be doing. This is where your legends of the gods and the goddesses came from. They were ETs that lived among the people, teaching them the next part of their evolution. So there are things you're supposed to have at certain times that are allowed. Atomic power was not supposed to be given to us until we could use it for a positive. It was supposed to be a positive invention. Instead, it came out as a negative, because when it was first used, it was used as a weapon. And they said once something has been used for a negative purpose, it can never really be turned around to positive. So that's what they didn't like. And that is why you had this mass influx of UFOs that began right at the end of World War II, when they all began to come in, and they were watching us, trying to see what were we doing. There had to be a way to stop us, because they knew the way man is, we wouldn't know what we were playing with, and we could very easily destroy the world.
Okay, so you say that there's been groups of ETs that have come down here to help us progress, but then what about the other side of the ET phenomena, which is the abductions and the implants? Would you say they're a negative thing?
It's not a negative thing at all, and I've written about this, especially in my book, The Custodians. They told me, you must understand this, what the purposes are. It is a monitoring, because a lot of these people have been chosen as part of the research to see how man is developing. Also, what they think is the examinations is they are trying to see how the body is doing, and they will heal the body, because they're very concerned about the increase in cancer and the different diseases. So they're monitoring the bodies to see how man is developing to his environment with all the pollutants and the additives and the food and everything. That's what a lot of the examinations are for. But the implants are there so they can find the ones that they're working with and tracking over long periods of time. They're giving the cures and remedies for these different diseases. They're giving them to different doctors, so they will be able to go with this. Some of the implants that are put into people are there for health reasons. They're kind of like time-released capsules that we take for colds and things. They're put into the body in various places to release medication, things to the system to keep the body healthy. And I know there are people like Dr. Lear who takes these out. They want to examine them. I tell them it's not going to make any difference if they're supposed to be there. They'll put them back anyway. Because some people, once they've been taking these implants out, they become very ill for the first time in their life. And in the book, I go into a lot of the reasons why they're put into different parts of their body. See, a lot of this can get very complex. And even after I wrote that book, now I'm getting so much more information, it's becoming even more complicated. And I don't even know if there'll be time in the lecture to cover a lot of this, because I'm apparently working on 3 more books. And one of them will be dealing with the new concepts of the ETs and the UFOs that nobody has ever considered before. But it is positive, because they're monitoring us. They're taking care of us. And the implants are not negative. I know Dr. Jacobs keeps saying, oh, they're here, they're going to be turned on. The implants will be turned on to turn the people into robots to help the ETs take over the world. That's absolutely ridiculous, because all the information I've got from hundreds and hundreds of cases is it's a wonderful thing. And the people who are experiencing abductions agreed to this before coming into this life. When I said earlier about making your plan, this was part of the plan. They agreed to be helping the ETs with their experimentation while they were alive. The problem is when you come in, you forget all of these commitments.
Of course.
The ETs say, we don't forget ours, you forget yours. But you did agree to be part of this program.
Okay, well look, we're getting near to the bottom of the hour now, so let's just fast forward your work very quickly to
There's a lot. In 40 years, there's a lot of work.
Oh my God. It's just incredible what you've done and what you've covered. It's absolutely amazing to have you on the show. And I'm sorry if I'm sort of darting in between subjects. It's just so much that we've not got enough time to cover all these in any, you know, great detail that they need. But fast forwarding,
yeah.
Why are the volunteers here, and you know, what do they do?
Okay, that's what I'll be speaking at in the lecture I'll be giving in London also, because it's all part of this whole thing. I don't know if we're going to have enough time to go through the entire...
Well, let's just briefly touch on what the volunteers are and what this work of yours sort of entails.
Okay, because in the lecture I'll go into more details of why they signed on to be here. They were asked to come to help Earth because Earth is in trouble and it needs help right now. And so they volunteered to come. Now the volunteers, there are three waves of volunteers, and they all agreed to be here, even though some of them have never lived on Earth before. Many of them are ETs. All their other lives have been on other planets, other dimensions, spaceships, but they were asked to volunteer and come to help Earth, so they agreed to come into a human body. And many of them have never lived on Earth before. You can imagine how confusing it is to come into a human body with all of the stuff on Earth. It's a very difficult planet anyway. So they come in. The first wave that I have divided this up in, the first wave would be now in their 50s and I think early 60s. They would have been born right after the end of World War II. This would be most of the group you call the baby boomers, not all, but the ones who have agreed. That when all that influx of new people were coming in at that time, that was the first wave of volunteers. And they're like 40s, 50s, and some of them have told me, I know I'm first wave, and they are in their early 60s, which would fall within the timeline. The first wave have had the hardest of all. They don't want to be here. They're very uncomfortable being here. They don't understand people. They don't understand what the violence is all about. They're always saying, I want to go home, but they don't know where home is. They just know it's not here. In my book, Keepers of the Garden, we cover that first wave intensely. And a lot of the first wave, when they were younger, tried to commit suicide because they wanted to get out of here. They just didn't want to be here. Even though they had good families, they had a good job, they still just didn't want to be here. So that's the first wave. They have had a very hard time adjusting to life on Earth. The second wave, I think you would say, would be in their 30s, some are in their early 40s. Some of these ages overlap anyway. The second wave came in, and they have had a much easier time. They've adjusted much easier to life on Earth. And when I've worked with them, they are called antennas, generators. They are here to generate positive energy that will affect everyone. And I've had people come to me and say, well, what is my purpose? What am I supposed to be doing? And we're doing the session. He said, all you're supposed to do is just be. You're not supposed to do anything. That by walking through a crowded mall or a crowded grocery store or anything like that, even a crowded street, their energy affects everyone that they meet, and it's more positive. And that's what they are, is just generators of positive energy. And they haven't had as many problems. And the first wave and the second wave, a lot of them don't want to have any children because they said children create karma. And I just want to do my job and then get out of here. I don't want to be stuck. And if I create karma, then I'm stuck here. So these are usually very gentle people that don't cause any problems, and they're just living their lives and going along the way they're supposed to do. And the second wave had it much easier. And I asked them one time, why did the first wave have more difficulty. They said somebody always has to be the pioneer. Someone has to be the way shower, the one that blazes the trail. That's why they had the most difficult.
Yeah.
Second wave followed in their footsteps, so it was easier. And the third wave, of course, are the children. These are the what people call the indigo children. That's not a very good term for them. Some of these are now in their early teens. And these are the hope of the world. These are the ones that have been programmed to come in and help us through all of this. The DNA has already been changed in their bodies, the majority of them, and they're here to help with the evolution of the world. It's very extremely, extremely important, these children are. I saw a show on Nova, or maybe it was some other TV show, where they said some of these children have already graduated from college at only 10 years old. And many of them are establishing organizations. And the organizations they are founding have to do with helping the children of the world. So this third wave are this very important children that have come in to help. They're the hope of the world. It's very, very important that we treat them in that way. They don't fit in with the normal schools. That's because they are not like the average student. And my company has printed books on, like I guess you would say, the care and feeding of these new children, and also talking to educators on how to handle these new children. And I've spoken at conferences where we're trying to educate the educators. If I can give out my website, they can find a lot of information about my books and all these other books that I've mentioned.
Sure, go ahead.
Is that okay? Okay. The name of my company is Ozark Mountain Publishing, but it's abbreviated on the website. It's OZARKMT.com. OZARKMT.com, or you can just type in DoloresCannon.com, and you'll get to the website with all of these books.
Okay, well, what we'll do, we'll put a web link on our webpage as well for yourself and with all your websites on. But just basically, the volunteers are to help the planet through this changing time, and also, I suppose, to stop us from harming the planet anymore.
Yes, because the ones who have been here all these countless lifetimes coming back again and again and again are on the wheel of karma. They're still here repaying karma. And they can't advance the planet because they're too caught up in their own junk, what I call the garbage and the baggage. And they can't do it. So new souls, volunteer souls, pure souls had to be brought in that were not contaminated so they can help save the planet. And that's what it's all about.
So does this fit in?
They don't know consciously, you know, okay.
No, of course not. Of course not. So, does this fit in with the 2012 that's obviously coming up very soon? Yeah.
Yes, all of that. But I think we're not going to have enough time. In my lecture, I'm going to cover all of this. It all fits beautifully, and it's all wonderful. It is not the end of the world, people. I don't know where people come up with this negativity. It is not the end of the world. It's the beginning of a new world that is absolutely beautiful and wonderful. And in my lecture, I'm going to cover all these different parts in more detail, and we will go into a lot about the New Earth and 2012.
So for the people who are not going to make it to the lecture as well, when you say New Earth, is there going to be a choice, basically, for people?
Yes. Because you can only go if your vibration is correct. It's like with anything. Your vibration has to match. Those who are still stuck in negativity, don't believe any of this, and don't want to change, it's their choice. That's okay, because there's no good and no bad. It's all decisions and lessons. If they want to stay with the old earth, they will stay with what they have created. And that's all right. That is what they want. And I've been told eventually they're going to get there. It just won't be as quick as the others. But they said, don't worry about it. They've all made their decisions. The ones that want to grow, who want to advance and want to move forward into a beautiful, wonderful reality will move on. The others can't, because you can't change that vibration that quickly. This is why it's happening slowly and gradually. If you were to change the vibration and frequency of the human body quickly, it would destroy the body. See, the entire world, the vibration and frequency is changing now. And in the lecture, I'll go into all the ways you can see how it is changing. Time is speeded up. Everything is changing. But if you were to, the body has to change to go with it. And so if the frequency of the body were to change that fast, it would destroy the body. So it's a gradual process. But the ones who don't want to change, their decision is to stay with what they are. They can't change it fast enough to catch up. But it's okay. Eventually, they will get there. But there's a lot happening right now. And if you're talking about the Bible, all of this is in the Bible. It's in the book of Revelation, where they talk about the new heaven and the new earth, and how some will be left and some will be taken. This is what it's all about. It's just that when St. John had the vision on the Isle of Patmos, it just meant he didn't realize that it was going to take 2,000 years before it was going to come true. He didn't understand what he was seeing. So it's all in the Bible also. This is just now we're living in the times when all of these wonderful things are happening. We're moving into a beautiful time, and it's an exciting time to be alive. Is it okay if I talk about my class?
Yes, I wanted to get you to mention that. You've got two classes, haven't you, on the 3rd of September and one on the to the 3rd to the 5th. So just tell us a bit about the class, please.
Yeah, the 3rd to the 5th. Yes, this is my class where I teach people to do what I do. I teach them to work in the deepest possible level of trance and how we can have access to this great power that has all knowledge and how they can do instantaneous healing. I've come over here once a year and give a class in England, so we have a lot of other people who are taking the class and are working with it now. But it's a three-day class, and a lot of people say you have to be a hypnotist to take the class. No, in the beginning, I thought you had to be a hypnotist to understand what I was going to teach. Then people began coming to me and saying, please, I want to learn this. And if you're into other healing modalities, Reiki or energy work, I found they can get this very easily. And some people just want to help others. Anyone who wants to take the class is welcome to come. It's all up to you if you can understand it and put it into practice. Because I'm trying to teach as many people as I can. I've already taught over 2,000 people all over the world, and my job is to teach them what I do. I can't see everyone. I'm completely overwhelmed. My waiting list is now a year ahead for private sessions. So 8 years ago, I decided I must teach other people to do what I do. It's the only way this will continue. So the class is in Farringdon, is that how you pronounce it? Farringdon, Oxfordshire. And if you look on my website that I gave you, ozarkmountain.com, or just put in DoloresCannon.com, there'll be a lot more details about the lecture in London on the 31st and also about the class, September the 3rd to the 5th in Oxfordshire. And you can sign up for the class online, or if you call the office or email the office, they'll give you more information about how to get into the class.
Okay.
I'm leaving the States in a few days, but my office will be there to answer any questions.
Okay. Well, look, Dolores, thank you so much for joining us today.
And thanks for asking me.
To find out more on Dolores Cannon, go to www.themoreshow.co.uk and look up Dolores Cannon under Past Guests. So until next time, be safe.